It's the Bruins Benders Podcast, Season 3, Episode 25. It's the playoff preview with Manny and Smitty, brought to you on the Inside the Rink Podcast Network. InsideTheRink.com is your one-stop shop for all your NHL, AHL, and ECHL news, insight, and analysis. Go ahead and hit the subscribe button on the Inside the Rink's YouTube page. If you're watching now, download the Inside the Rink app on your phone and get extensive hockey coverage there. And here is some information on how to sign up for what a great time it is to sign up for ESPN Plus.
Yeah, you can sign up for ESPN Plus at InsideTheRink.com/ESPN. And you can do it today so you don't miss any of the upcoming NHL playoff action, right?
Playoffs.
Head on over to InsideTheRink.com/ESPN Plus and sign up today. It's not ESPN Plus. It's just /ESPN to sign up for ESPN Plus, though.
Sure.
That's what you're looking for. You're looking for the ESPN Plus so you can get all the hockey, all the autumn market games, all the playoff action, all the hockey. That's what you want. So go over to InsideTheRink.com/ESPN and sign up today so you do not miss any of that action.
Absolutely. And the action is coming. The Atlantic Division, I mean, this is probably the best case scenario for the playoffs with Florida, Tampa Bay, and Boston, Toronto. It should be just two fantastic series. And I don't know how great it is for Boston. We'll talk about that coming up. But these two series should be really, really, really fantastic series with a lot of, a lot of hatred and a lot of history and a lot of great players. And it's just going to be some really, really good hockey. But before we talk about that, Jack Edwards is wrapping it up. 19 years as the play-by-play announcer for the Boston Bruins. And when I think of Jack, I think of someone that you kind of either loved him or hated him for a while. But then I thought he made that point where everybody kind of just sort of, he just kind of grew on people. And all of a sudden, by the end of it, he's kind of iconic in a way. And even though he struggled, with his words and speech and such toward the end and getting his thoughts together, he still was sort of that, I guess, that iconic, almost not quite Johnny Most, but kind of that Homer Boston guy that people just sort of learned to love.
Yeah, I think that he is definitely falls into that category of a Homer Boston guy, but that's kind of what you want from your, he wasn't a national guy. He wasn't calling national games. So when you tune in as a Bruins fan, you want a guy that's cheering for the Bruins. You don't want a guy who's cheering for the other team. So I think he fit in there. He grew up watching Bruins hockey. He's from New Hampshire, I believe, or lives in the area, or he's from Mass and moved to New Hampshire. So, he's from this area. He understands the town. He understands the team. He loves hockey. That's clear from his broadcast that he's passionate about the team and the sport. And he was over the top and but he was our guy. And it's kind of funny because I Bruins fans over the years have picked on him, and I certainly have done it here and there over certain things that he said and kind of wild, soliloquies and different stuff that he's said throughout the years, but he's our guy. It's like, we can pick on him, but when another fan base comes to pick on him, we'll defend him fiercely. It's like, no, we'll pick on our own guy, but you can't pick on our guy. Right. Bruins fans loved him and he was kind of like that towards the end, kind of like that grandfather that was, starting to slip a little bit, but he was still our guy. And like you said, he's iconic. And towards the end, everybody just kind of, came to accept that's the way that it was going to be and loved him for his passion and love of the Bruins.
Yeah, he had some real memorable moments. Of course, Pat Maroon was a big, big moment there and something that was probably, regrettable. And he said some things here and there that just made you say, whoa, whoa, like slow down there. But overall, I mean, he was a homer and he embraced it. And I think he said it at some point, get over it when people talked about him being a homer, because, like you said, it's Bruins hockey and that's the broadcast. And you kind of want the announcer to be an extension of you. Like, you want them to be agreeable to you when you're swearing at the TV and you know, on a call or something, or the Bruins aren't playing particularly well, or whatever the case may be. You kind of want him to speak what you're saying at times. And again, he was over the top at times, but he was our guy. And it'll be interesting to see who it is. I don't know if it's Mike Monaco or someone coming in who,
I've heard a few names. One of them really excites me. The other one, I think he'll do a fine job. Alex Faust, they've mentioned, who filled in this year for Jack a few times. I think he does a really great job. The other one is, I've heard, and I have no idea whether it's true or not. It's a rumor that I heard, but they were saying John Forslund may leave Seattle after three seasons. If the Bruins job was open and they wanted him to take it. So I think that would be a tremendous addition, because John Forslund is a fantastic.
Oh, he's excellent. He's
play, one of yeah. Yeah. Play by play guy. So, if that could happen, I would love that.
That would be fantastic.
But we're going to give Jack a little bit of love later in the show. Just so, stick around for that. So it should be, it's a nice little tribute to him.
For sure. All right. Rapid review. On April 13th, was at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh needed this one desperately, and the Bruins win 6-4. Pittsburgh, just, you know, a typical Pittsburgh. You know, they give up a ton of goals, and Eric Carlson makes it just a horrific play on a wrap around the boards where he doesn't even react to it, ends up in the net. Typical Pittsburgh lately, and the Bruins get a win on the road against a, you know, as desperate a team as you can have. And it was a big, you know, it was a big win at the time, keeping the Bruins in the first place hunt there. But that was really hard loss for Pittsburgh at home to lose that one.
It was a wild game. 0-0 after one, then six combined goals in the second and four combined goals in the third. Not exactly, locking it up for the playoffs there for the Bruins. But they scored enough to win the game, and it was a game that Pittsburgh did desperately need. Sidney Crosby had a little something to say to David Pastrnak towards the end of this one, and I'll get to that later in the show as well, because Sid might make an appearance here in one of our little segments.
He might. Oh. Sid, great player, one of the greats of all time. But God, he can be a whiny little bitch.
He can be a whiny little bitch. And let me ask you this, though. He is a free agent, I believe, at the end of this.
He is.
Do you think he re-signs in Pittsburgh? I do. But I would 100,000% take him on the Bruins.
I know where you're going.
Even at age, 35 or whatever he is.
No, 100%. I mean, this year he was one of the top players in the league. Like, absolutely. I would take Sidney Crosby on this team 100%. And
do you think
even go to the point where, you become a real legitimate cup contender?
Oh, sure you do. There. Sure you do.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, that would be, and it would be great for him, because he would have a team that pays a little more attention to defense, has a good surrounding, much better surrounding cast, better goaltending, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing would be better for Sid. But to have Sid leave that team, I mean, they have to keep him.
Right.
They have to kind of give him what he wants.
Yeah. I agree.
They have to. Same with Ovechkin in Washington. Like, you can't let, at this point in their careers, you can't let those guys go, because you're not going to get, as much as you think you would get in return at this point. They're still high level players, and they're iconic. I mean, they're just like Sidney Crosby is up there with Lemieux and Jagr and those guys in the history of that franchise. Like, you can't have that happen.
Yeah, I think John Buchogras was saying that if Sid plays until he's 41 or 42, he has an outside shot of getting 2,000 points. He could be the second guy ever with 2,000 points. Yeah. That would be...
He could.
I mean, he's still really playing at a really high level. I think it's a 99.9% that both those guys return to their teams. If Sid did leave, where do you think the top two or three destinations would be for him?
I would say Colorado.
I agree 100%.
Toronto. I would say, and Boston would be in there, I think. in the mix. Like, I think he'd be intrigued by it if they were. Like, I don't know what he would demand for contract and all that stuff. Like, that, of course, plays into it. But I think Boston would kick the tires on it, and I think he'd be interested. I think there'd be a mutual interest.
I think so, too.
Or not it would formulate, I don't know.
I was going to say, I didn't think of Toronto, but I had Colorado and Boston, both just for the reason that he works out in the offseason with McKinnon and Marchand. They're all Nova Scotia guys. Mm-hmm. They work out together in the offseason. I could definitely see him going to Colorado. That'd probably be his number one choice because they're built to win. But I could see, he played in the Olympics with Marchand. They had good chemistry. So I could see that Boston being a fit. But like I said, it's 99.99 that he goes back to Pittsburgh. So this is just a little pie in the sky on my part.
Now, but the other thing is with them is like Malkin and Letang and Carlson, what do you do there?
Yeah.
Like, it's not working.
Right.
And you can't put the team around them that is necessary. So these guys are going to go out with like a wet fart if you can't get something done there. So somebody's got to go. You know, so Carlson was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
They're similar players.
And it's a huge contract, too.
It's a huge contract. Yeah, it was a mistake. You know, he capitalized on a fantastic year on a bad team where his points were inflated to all hell.
Yeah.
Like, and he capitalized. Good for him. But it was bad, bad contract. April 15th was at Washington, a stinkeroo. This was another desperate team, and this time the desperate team wins. Washington wins it 2-0. Bruins just basically do not much of anything and are in sort of coasting mode, as we'll see at the end of the year here.
Yeah, not much effort at all. They were playing in that game like they didn't want to get hurt, like they didn't want any part of anyone. Capitals outshot them 25-16. The Bruins did have 50 hits in the game. I think that's a little inflated to Washington's 41. Yeah. Not a lot there. I mean, they were kind of going through the motions, waiting for the playoffs to start.
Yeah, they had two games this year. The two lowest shot totals were both against Washington this year, which I thought was interesting. I think it's kind of coincidental because the timing here is just like you said. Right. So I'm wondering, why are you playing guys?
Yeah.
If you go in not wanting to just bring AHL roster up and just sit a bunch of guys and just own it. Like, why go in there and half-ass the thing? Because now you're picking up bad habits, playing poorly. Why even chance that?
I don't know. There was so many things about the way they handled the end of the season that I wasn't crazy about. Like, Marchand seems to be fighting something. Either that or maybe it's the puck. Because I'm not sure he made an offensive play worth a damn in any of the last two or three games. Like, every time the puck hit his stick, it exploded off of it. Or he'd stick handle and lose it. Or he would pass it to the other team. Or, like, he just couldn't do anything right offensively. Like, it seems like he's fighting an injury. And if he's fighting an injury, why the fuck is he playing? You know? Like,
that tells me wrist or shoulder or something.
Exactly. I feel like a hand thing. I mean, he did get that knee-on-knee hit a little while back. And maybe, you know, he's feeling some effects from that. But, like, if that's the case, sit the guy down. Sit him down. But then I saw today or yesterday, he was one of four guys on the team to play in all the games. First time he's done it since 2013-14. So I bet 100% that was something that he wanted to accomplish. But does that matter, or does winning a Stanley Cup matter? Like, who gives a rat's ass if you played in all 82 games? I don't care. Playing 80, playing 75, playing 70. Be ready when the playoffs start.
This is 2 years in a row where the players seem to dictate how the season ends. 2 years in a row now. Like, you got to sit people down and say, look, we're trying to win the cup. Like, and then you go out and play half-assed and you play terrible hockey. Like, why are you playing? So this is when the coach or the organization as a whole just says, no, this is how we're doing it. So they didn't learn from last year. And now they come in at the end of this year. They I think they mismanaged the last two seasons at the end of the year. I get the whole 82 game thing, and he wanted to do it probably because of the hip surgeries and stuff and prove a point. Great. Fantastic. But that's not going to help when you aren't playing well in round one and you lose. Like, that's not what people are going to remember.
No,
you know,
no one's going to care. Yeah. No one's going to care if you're out in round one for the third year in a row. No one's going to give a shit about that.
No one's going to care. No one's going to care. And then it was Ottawa at home, shirt off your back night. Might as well just lit them on fire. 3-1 loss and made it 2-1. And then Pasternak decided that he wanted to play the Maple Leafs, gave it to the other team, finished out that game in fitting fashion as to how they finished the last two games of the year, and just sort of seemed disinterested. And like you said, preseason hockey,
they played horrible for two periods. And then I don't know if Montgomery lit into him at the second intermission and was like, guys, the playoffs are going to start pretty soon. Can we kind of give a shit? Like, we haven't scored a goal in five plus periods. Can we pretend at least that we care? And they outshoot him 22-1 at one point, cut it to 2-1, and then Pasternak passes to the other team. They come in and score 3-1. That was their second shot of the period, Ottawa.
Right, right.
The Bruins had three shots, I think, after one, their lowest total in a period all year, and then 11 shots maybe after two, and they ended up with 35 shots.
Wow. Yeah, they just turned it on for whatever reason.
So maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed, the Bruins can flip a switch here come the weekend, come round one, and be ready to go. But it certainly didn't seem like they were ready to go or gearing up for the playoffs in these last couple of games.
No, and we'll talk about it in the chirps, but I think Jim Montgomery's showing some signs of being a little nervous. So we'll talk about that too, because it just seems like some of the things he's doing and saying are causing him, are almost causing me to think that he's not unsure about his team right now. So, and that's not a good sign. Seven Chirps is sponsored by Lobster Brewing and Tasting Room in downtown Woonsocket, Rhode Island, specializing in small batch ales and lagers. It's open 7 days a week. Use the coupon code SPORTS to get 10% off your online order at lobsterbrewing.com. Follow them at Lobster Brewing for new beers and events. And at Chirp One, in a borderline travesty, seventh player award winner is Trent Frederick, who, nothing against Freddie, nice year. But if you don't think Dan Hyman deserves this, then you don't get the premise.
Yeah, I'm with you. It should have been Hyman. It should have been. I mean, maybe the voting was done early, but and Freddie did have a good year. But they were expecting him coming off of last year to have another pretty good year. Danton Heinen was in street clothes in fucking October, like hanging out at the rink, like eating ramen noodles.
Playing the same amount of hockey as I was.
Right. Yeah. Like just hanging out, like, hey, boys, nice job on the skate today. Just like hanging around the rink, being, like the dude abides or whatever. Just like, hey, man, what's up?
Hey, man.
Let's hang out a little bit after practice. And then all of a sudden he's playing on one of the top, on the top line, and he's got, 16 goals. And so he really went above and beyond because he was in street clothes to playing on the top line. And was getting the veteran minimum and, had a really good season, produced well, did all the little things, and has been a real good add to that top line. So he should have won it, in my opinion. And I think second probably should have been Morgan Geeky because he had a career high in goals, coming over from a new team.
You know, this will never change. There's this contingent of Bruins fans who love the Neanderthal thing, like the whole, like, Freddie's our guy because Freddie Fight Club. Like, so any chance they can vote for a guy like Trent Frederick, they will. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Danton Heinen, they don't get him. They just don't get him. He's a good, solid two-way player, but they just don't. He's not flashy. He doesn't have that thing that Frederick has. Frederick had a very similar year to last year. Like he's, you know, he just, I mean, he had, it was better.
It was better.
It wasn't like it was out of the, it was out of the question and he couldn't do it.
He also
did it.
He also has trailed off significantly, in the last month. He's had a ton of chances. He had in the Ottawa game alone, I think he had like six, like grade A scoring chances and didn't score. But you know, he's trailed off significantly in like the last month or so.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm not sure exactly what they're watching, but I agree with you. I think there is a,
I love the graphic.
Yeah. Dan Heinen wins the Bruins Benders eighth player award.
Eighth player award.
He does. And Danton, that is beers on us at Lops. So that's what the eighth player award wins. You don't get any kind of a car or anything. You get some
bar down at New England IPA.
Yeah, you get some beers on the boys here at Lops Brewing in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, and we will happily take you down there and get you drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a poll on this very topic right before it happened. Who is your seventh player award winner? 244 votes, and coming in at 66% was Danton Heinen. And coming in at 8% apiece was Morgan Geekie and Trent Fredericks. 18% for Charlie Coyle.
Yeah. I mean, he is a top two.
What are we doing?
Yeah, I mean, he's a second line. I mean, he's from Weymouth, so there you go. Yeah. You gotta have the loyalty. Gotta look after your own guys. So the loyalty to Chucky and Charlie Coyle and Weymouth, and then, you know, Freddie Fight Club up there towards the top. He's Dan Hines kinda like Krejci. Like always been underrated, and that's part of the reason is because he plays. Heinen is a more physical player than Krejci was, but Krejci was definitely a, you know, a finesse guy, and he was underappreciated. We'll just leave it at that.
I've said this for years. Yeah. Like if you are that guy, Pastrnak even gets this rap with some people. Mm-hmm. Like the minute he does something wrong, they jump all over him. Because he's a certain type of player. Now he's a much more physical player than Krejci is now. Like people just have these, you know, these sunglasses on when it comes to Pastrnak who don't like him. So, you know, he's a much more physical player and much more defensive minded player, all that stuff. Like his metrics are much better than they were when he came in the league, but they still typecast him as this finesse, fancy look at me guy. And they don't buy in because they'd rather buy in to PJ Stock and you know, guys that just Milan Lucic. Mm-hmm. I still see comments on social media. Well, if Lucic was there, what? He's 36. He can't move.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
Here's a question for you. If David Pastrnak was not on the Bruins, are they a playoff team?
No, 100% no.
I agree with you.
I mean, he was by far.
Yeah.
The best player on the team. If you look back the last 15 years, like you would be hard pressed to find another guy more valuable that they've had in a season than Pastrnak this season.
He was
like a third of the team.
He had 110 points, I believe. And the next closest guy was Brad Marchand with 67 points.
Didn't even get to 70.
Nope.
Yeah.
And then after that,
43 more points.
Yeah, and then after that, Charlie Coyle was 60, so 50 more points than him.
50 more points than the third guy.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
So
that's what I'm saying.
I mean, without him, they're not a playoff team. So there's
a legitimate heart consideration.
Oh, I don't know why he's not getting more buzz for it. Right. I mean, all the other teams. I mean, you talk about Kucherov has 50 more points than the next closest guy. Yeah, but they still have guys in the 80s.
Yeah.
Right. Our next closest guy is 67.
Right.
You know? Right. He should be.
Centers away, and he had this year. Like, he needed to step up, and he did in different ways for them to be a playoff team, and he did. So.
He was plus 21, second highest on the team.
Right. I mean, and people say, oh, he doesn't play defense and he turns a puck over. And of course he turns a puck over because he has it all the fucking time.
Exactly.
You know, he plays 20 minutes a game.
He has the puck all the time.
Kucherov turns it over too, folks.
If you look at all those, all the guys in the Hart Trophy consideration and the top playmakers and talents in the league. They all turn it over a ton because they have the puck the most. That's right. Why they have it all the time. So it's going to happen that they'll turn it over from time to time. Mm-hmm. And sure, some of Pasternak's turnovers, like the one against Ottawa the other night, is terrible. It's a bad turnover. He shouldn't have done it. But, you know, if he's not on the team, you are not making the playoffs. You're fucking Ottawa right now. You're wrapping it up and deciding where you're going to go to golf. Like, you're not in the playoffs. So the people that are up Pasternak's ass need to get over it, because he's going to be here for a long time, and he's probably going to be, if not the leading goal scorer in team history, he's going to be top two. So get over it.
100%. I mean, he's all those guys we talked about, Matthews and all those guys.
Kucherov, McDavid, McKinnon.
Yeah, they're all in the top.
Yes.
Turnovers per 60 minutes, all in the top.
Yeah.
All of them on the top 10 because they have the puck all the time. They're a major focus of the team,
mm-hmm.
you know, in minutes, and they play the most minutes. You know, Mitch Marner plays like 22 minutes a night.
It's crazy.
You know, I mean, it's crazy as a forward. All right. Chirp number three, Don Sweeney. This is an interesting one. Don Sweeney has become the GM of Team Canada for next year's Four Nations face-off, with Jim Nill serving as an associate GM. What are your thoughts on Sweeney? Is this a good idea to take on this responsibility as Team Canada GM?
Probably not. I mean, probably not.
Right.
I mean, you don't have enough other shit to worry about. Like, the Bruins are trying to make the playoffs. Like, I guess it's going to happen over the summer. So, like, in your summer, you can, do it, whatever. But yeah, shouldn't...
Here's my question about Team Canada,
okay,
or whatever this is, okay? How much do you do? Like, you take the best players from Canada and you put them on the team. Like, you don't trade or... Like, what do you do as GM of this team?
That's a valid point. Like, you got to convince the guys to be on the team.
Meetings and you make some phone calls and you put your team together, and then what? You're not going to trade guys.
Yeah, you're not coaching the team.
Sign guys. Yeah.
Have to determine. So you invite whatever 30 guys or 35 right. guys, and then you got to cut the roster down to 22 or whatever it is. So that's part of your job, is like evaluating talent around the league.
Yeah, that's a.
I mean, I guess so.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. Give it to somebody who's retired and can't. They don't have enough coaches up there that's retired. Like, give it to a retired guy.
GM around the league.
Yeah. Give it to an up and coming guy. But like, Canada's crazy for this, so they probably they need a name guy from a good team, I guess. And the Bruins have been a good team, and I guess Sweeney's a name guy. But I mean. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like it's probably a waste of his time. He probably should be worrying about who the Bruins, are going to acquire in the offseason, or trying to make trades in the offseason, and are trying to figure out their goalie situation, whatever the case may be. I feel like he's got enough on his plate to not really worry about this.
Right. That's the thing. It just feels funny to me. Chirp three. The goalie situation update. Monty has said that they will probably go rotation. Could be game one to game two to game three, whatever the case may be.
But
they will play both goaltenders.
I told you. I feel like they are going to do it. I feel like they will. I feel like when those guys play a certain amount of games in a row, I think they feel mentally that they kind of get drained, and that's what they're used to, is playing, a rotation. So,
well, of course they will now, because you kept playing them. You kept playing them every other game.
Like, yeah.
How can they go out and have the fortitude to play seven game series?
Yeah.
And you program them that way.
Yeah, they did. They have. I 100% agree with you with all of it. I don't think it's a good thing. I think they're asking for second guessing. I think they're asking for trouble. There's not anything that's really exciting me about this. So, I mean, here's a graphic up right now. We have the highest point percentages in Bruins history for goaltenders. Linus Ullmark first at 756. Jeremy Swayman second at 681. And then Gilles Gilbert at 654, Jerry Cheevers at 652, and Tuca at 633.
How about 88, 25, and 10 for Allmark? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he's played really well. He was playing really well coming down the stretch here. And since the trade deadline, he's been playing great. I think it'll be his net to start. I think he's played better than Swayman lately, even though they both had pretty good games, you know, the last few. Allmark's, I don't know if it was the first goal, the second goal last night is probably one he would have wanted back. He kind of slid across the left and either overslid or was kind of out of position. And it was kind of a weird save attempt there and kind of got through him. But other than that, he's been really good. The problem with him though, is once you hit the playoffs, he seems to get a little rattled or a little sped up or whatever the case may be. So we'll have to keep a real close eye on that. If he goes out in game one and gives up four, you know, you definitely will see Swayman in game two. Yeah. Whether Swayman has a good game, then what happens? Beats the fuck out of me. I mean, maybe they want to keep Toronto guessing. I don't know.
How about this stat, though? Jeremy Swayman's 3-0 against Toronto this year, like 9.56 save percentage. Like he's owned Toronto.
Interesting.
But Allmark has, since the trade deadline, has outplayed Swayman. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what do you do? So we had a poll.
Okay.
366 votes.
Wow.
Who should the Bruins play in net for the playoffs? Is it Linus Allmark, Jeremy Swayman, or go with the rotation? Rotation wins 49%.
Well, people are drinking the Kool-Aid.
Half the people are okay with the rotation. 13% had Jeremy Swayman and 38% had Linus Allmark. Boy, how times have changed. 2 months ago, you would have seen Swayman at like 65%.
Sure.
Like, because he was playing so well.
It just goes to show you what the Hawk goaltender will do to a poll. You know, you get a hot goalie and then everybody's like, yep, he's the one I want. And that's the way it should be, really.
Sure.
So whoever's hot right now should get the net. I think based on that, it's Allmark. But the numbers that you gave with Swayman against Toronto certainly would cause me some pause and say maybe we should go with Swayman from the beginning because of the success he's had against Toronto.
You know, we have some breaking news. Breaker 1-9. Bruins Maple Leafs game 1 Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Oh, it's got the prime time slot, huh?
Prime time hockey night in Canada slot.
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock. So we will be a post game YouTube live at roughly, you know, 10:30-ish, 10:45. Unless it's in like triple overtime. But we will be doing that sort of thing. So join us on YouTube live for the post game episode of game 1. Saturday night, 8 p.m. start, Bruins and Leafs. Chirp 4, based on players who played at least 400 minutes of 5-on-5 play this season, who is number one goals against per 60 minutes?
It is your friend and mine, Jesper Boqvist, the best defensive forward in the league.
In the league.
Look at him.
In the league.
Goals against per 61.14 with players who played at least 400 minutes. Matt Martin, second. Adam Lowry, third. Jakob Silverberg, fourth. Evan Rodriguez, fifth. And then the only name on this list, or a couple names, Nino Niederreiter, seventh. Alexander Barkov, ninth. Anton Lindell, tenth. Some Florida Panthers on there. But not really any big names other than Barkov. No. So that's a bunch of guys who have played you know, limited minutes, shall we say. Yes. But since he's been in that fourth line center role, I think he's done a nice job.
He has. He's done a nice job. And that line of probably what, Boqvist with Maroon and who's the other one on that side?
It was Lauko. It's been Beecher. It was Brazo for a bit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Beecher there. No, I don't think so. Yeah. No. So I think it probably will be Lauko.
Yeah.
I think it will. And I think JVR will be in on the third line.
Yeah, I mean, Boqvist has been good, and he brings speed. You know, he can put the puck in the net occasionally. Like, he can make a play. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what you want. I just hope that the fourth line is – I just don't love Lauko there. And I'm really – I would rather have Beecher or Brazo in there just because they bring something different. You know, they have either size or speed or hands or something like elite levels that, as you've talked about, like that they bring to the table. And Lauko doesn't have really anything elite level.
He's just kind of a guy. He's played 60 games. He has 2 goals, 8 assists, 10 points. He's -3.
Jesus. I mean, that's like Carson Coleman. That's
he like, does have 176 hits, which is
third
on the team. Behind Frederick and Geeky.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you hear who set the record for NHL record for hits this year? I think it was.
Who?
Old friend Jeremy Lauzon. Had like 383 or something. Outrageous.
Yeah. Sounds like Cliffy Hockey. Sounds like he's running around just to hit people. And
banging
and,
guys.
But, yeah. Or the other team has the puck in his end a lot.
He's going to make 8 hits to clear the zone. Yeah.
I'm going to pass it to you, and then I'm going to hit you. Yeah. I'm going to turn the puck over. I'm going to hit you, and then, get it back, and then pass it to you again. Hit you again. Right. Yeah. Rinse and repeat.
Chirp 5. Do the Bruins get enough balanced scoring, which they will need in the playoffs? Interesting graphic. David Pastrnak and Pavel Zacha had the most since March 1, had the most points at 22 apiece. And then Danton Heinen and Marchand, 14, and DeBrus, 13. And then you had Coyle at 10, and then it dropped significantly. Is this going to be an issue?
Yes.
In the playoffs.
Yes.
Yeah.
It will be.
I think so too.
They changed, I feel like, the way they play when they were having those defensive problems in late February, early March. And they're much more of a dump and chase team now. And they do not have the speed to get in on the forecheck.
Right.
So. Right. People, they dump it in, but then the other team just grab the puck and exit the zone. They're not being creative. They're not trying the same amount of slot passes and they're not shooting from all angles, which is another thing they should be doing. But Montgomery at some point said he prefers quality over quantity, which I think is horseshit, especially come playoff time. Get pucks to the net, have it hit a body, tip one in, get a rebound. You don't score beautiful goals in the playoffs team most of the time. It's a hardworking goal. It's a greasy goal. It's a turnover and a chance. It's things like that. It's not tic tac toe and score unless you're on the power play. Those just don't happen. True. The time and space is closed up. Everything's tighter checking. You don't have as much room to make plays. Right. So I think that's going to be an issue for them. You know, some of those guys have struggled too. We mentioned it before. Freddie hasn't been great. Even though he's getting some chances, DeBrusk is streaky. All the guys towards the top there were all the guys on Pastrnak's line. It's Pastrnak, Zacha, and Heinen. They're all on the same line.
They're all on the same line.
The rest of those guys need to step their games up or it's going to be like JVR has been non-existent since, Christmas time, pretty much. They have some, it looked like he was going to be a pretty good depth guy for them scoring goals and maybe, once the playoffs start, that'll happen because he has some experience and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I think it is going to be an issue. I think it's going to be an issue, whoever they go up against. And are those, bottom six forwards and even the defense going to be able to chip in enough to help them win series? I'm not sure.
You know, that line of JVR, Geeky, Frederick is a big, I mean, they have a, that's going to be really important.
It is.
See what they do. I mean, that's the line that needs to do something. I mean, they just can't go out there and exist, and they certainly can't go out there and give up goals and that sort of thing. The Bruins did have 30% success rate on the power play against Toronto this season. The problem is now that their power play has been pretty bad.
They did make some changes.
They did, and they have that line that you just mentioned as literally their top power play line now, mm-hmm. and they scored. Zacha scored off a rebound last night. So maybe that fixes that. But that line of Frederick Geeky and this series coming up, they've got to be a difference maker type line. They have to be. And JVR has got to give you something. And if he doesn't, then maybe you throw Maroon up there and you figure out the fourth line. You know, you bring Beecher back in or somebody. But that line needs to give them something. And hopefully the power play is now a little better off with that line of Pasternak, Zacha, and Heinen.
Speaking of the power play, we with the changeup last night, Shattenkirk was on power play one.
Yes.
So we asked the question in a poll last night, with Shattenkirk's experience and power play capability, does he have to be in the lineup for the playoffs? We had 216 votes. 74% said yes. Mm-hmm. 17% said no, and 9% said depends, and that's matchup based. As some people said, I'd like to rotate him in with Grizz. Some people said matchup specific for fast teams, yes. Heavy teams, I'm not sure. You know, some people said him over Grizz. So, you know, not a lot of love for Grizzlick out there. What do you think? What's your take on that? Should Shattenkirk be in the lineup for his experience and expertise on the power play?
Yes, I do. And part of the reason why I would lean toward playing him is because he does bring a little bit of offensive awareness in just 5-on-5 and power play. And I'll say this again, and I've said it before, and I love the guy, but this is the one downfall of Charlie McAvoy. He's not this guy. He's not this power play quarterback guy. So if you look at all the great defensemen who win Norris trophies, like the majority of them were like power play quarterback, you know, guys on the power play. And he just has never really been that guy. Occasionally here or there, but for the most part, it's a weakness of him. And now he's off the thing. So,
well, he's on power play. Yeah, he's on power play two now. But yeah.
Right. But he's off the first one.
I mean,
power play two plays 30 seconds.
Yep.
You know, they get ready for the vulnerable.
Well, I mean, he should, based on, like you said, it is a weakness. And based on his play, he should be off of it. He should be.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have, he has all the physical ability to be good there. Like, he can pass the puck, he can stick handle, he can shoot it, but his decision-making of when should he shoot, when should he pass, forcing passes, forcing plays, a little too, what's the word I'm looking for, repetitive kind of, when he comes down the wall, it's always, I come down the wall, I go behind the net, I swing out the other side, and then I try to make a play. Like, too much the same, not enough variation to his game, and he has trouble getting shots through, which is an art form, and Shattenkirk is excellent at getting shots through from the point, because it's a little flick of the wrist to a corner or a tippable shot that he can do. And not everybody can do that. You know, there's certain guys that just have that ability. And McAvoy, you know, maybe he'll get that at some point in his career with experience. Maybe not. Maybe this is who he is. Yeah. Maybe he's a, you know, 55-point guy, you know, 10 goals, 45 assists, and that's great. And if he plays shutdown defense and stops with the head up his ass stuff, you know, that's a really valuable guy, and that should be your number one defenseman and stud and shutdown guy and all that. Play physical, put up your 10 goals, your 45 assists, and shut down the other team's top lines. Like, that, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
You're not going to be a Norris Trophy winner, but
he's going to be a little more, you know, that's who he's been compared to in some, because
I know
of his frame.
Yeah. And Drew Doughty too. Ray Bourque averaged like 300 shots a season.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. He shot the puck all the time.
So, you know, if you want to be that, Charlie. When you get the puck into the zone and it comes back to you, don't defer all the fucking time. Like, right, let it go. Shoot the puck. Get it on net.
Some of that is, like, those guys, Marchand and Pastrnak, were before him. And I think he sort of, even though he's, you know, a leader on the team and so forth, and it shouldn't matter, he still feels like he's beneath them. Like,
I agree with you. Yeah.
You know, he has to defer to them and set them up, and, you know, especially Marchand. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, Charlie, you're the highest paid player on the, you know, second highest paid player on the team. Like, for God's sakes, you know. Well, we have a breaking news.
More breaking news.
Nikita Kucherov with his 100th assist tonight. 100 assists for Kuch. And the Lightning are leading the Maple Leafs 5-1. Austin Matthews hunting for his 70th goal tonight.
Yeah, I mean, that's exciting.
That's pretty good.
I mean, 70.
Solani and Mogilny.
Yeah, I mean, 70 goals is and he's getting heart consideration more than Pastrnak is. For the 70 goals.
Oh, of course.
Even though Pastrnak has,
off the charts.
Yeah, Kucherov and McKinnon are both having ridiculous.
Kucherov, I think, is the best player in the league. I think he is the best player. If I had to start, I would probably take Kucherov right now.
Would you? I don't know if I would. I think I would go.
40 points or whatever it is.
I think I would go McKinnon.
Would you still go McKinnon?
I think I would, because he's a center. Really? He's fast.
Yeah, the center thing is definitely a thing.
He's got game-breaking speed. He has 50 whatever goals. He's got 130 something points. He's younger. I think I would go McKinnon. Yeah.
I would go Kucherov, Matthews, and McKinnon, and then like Draisaitl, McDavid.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. McKinnon is also big too, so he can withstand kind of the pounding of the of the playoffs. Matthews is a big guy too, that matters. So I think I would go McKinnon, Matthews, then maybe Kuch, and then McDavid or Draisaitl. We've seen Kucherov play up close, and his hands are second to none.
I mean, second, and that's why you see the 100 assists and the goals. And I mean, he's just phenomenal.
His hockey IQ and his vision, and
oh my god,
just amazing, amazing to watch. He really is. He really is. Because Tampa Bay's been good for so long, they get everybody kind of gets the like, oh Jesus, him again, again.
Stammer had something to do with that. Like Stamkos was the best player for a while.
Sure.
And it maybe took a little bit of the attention away from Kucherov. Now Kucherov should get the accolades, but I think that maybe Stamkos having a head start there, you know, people had it as Stamkos' team.
People down there love him, but just around the league, I think he doesn't get the kind of recognition he deserves. And you know, he went to the All-Star game. People booed him like he didn't because he didn't give a shit. But like, you know, if you're a competitor and you're in that situation, like I'm kind of with him. Like he kind of went.
Do you think the Russian thing matters?
Oh, it does. It does. Yeah,
I think it absolutely does.
Yeah, I think it does. I think
that's why some people still favor Crosby over Ovechkin.
Sure,
even though Ovechkin's going for Gretzky's record.
Yeah, yeah. Sure they do. And the goal thing, you know, with Ovechkin, like the goals are sexier than assists.
Sure.
I mean, to most people, but I'll take a good fucking saucer pass, you know, over an assist
over fucking. Whatever. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Chirp 6. Jim Montgomery got into Charlie McAvoy a little bit during the game on the bench the other night. Don't see much of that with the Stars. Is Monty starting to show that he has nothing to lose and maybe a little nervous? Is management asking him to be a little tougher? Does he think he needs to win to keep his job?
That's a good one. I don't know if he thinks he needs to win to keep his job. Because they have always been about playoffs here and not winning. So I don't think that necessarily matters, even though that drives me up a fucking wall and makes me crazy. So I don't think that that's it. I do feel like he might be nervous though. Like I do feel like he might be a little bit like we've had some disappointments here and we got to get things going in the right direction. So I don't know if he's nervous or if he's feeling the pressure a little bit, but there's something there with him a little bit where I think he feels like he needs to, and they need to come through and at least win a round or two.
I'm with you. And I think that he is nervous because I think he's, if they don't win this series, I think there's some doubt as to can he get enough out of this team? Like, I just think he's unsure of himself already. He was last year in the playoffs. And I think he is now because of some of the moves he's kind of been making. And he does a lot of sort of nervous stuff. Like, we saw Julian, like, stick with lines and just stay stoic, and then it would work out. But a guy like Montgomery just seems to tinker with shit and do all this stuff and seems to have a little bit of anxiety in his coaching. I don't know if that rubs off on the team or not. I think it's a veteran enough team to just kind of get through it and just try to play good hockey. But I think Montgomery might be a little nervous. I don't think he'll lose his job, but I think if they lose this round, the next year is lame duck city. It's like next year is like, that's it. Because I get the whole, they need to make the playoffs and they probably don't care. But 3 years in a row out in the first round, maybe there's a time when it's like, okay, we'd like to make a further run, get more ticket gates. Like, you know what I mean? Just be first round and out all the time. There might be a little bit of a sense of urgency there. I don't think Sweeney's going anywhere because there's so many positives he's done with this team that I don't think they would fire him. But I think Montgomery, if they lose in five, like, I think you have to seriously consider, is this guy the right guy for the job?
Yeah, I think it'll definitely be if they lose in five, especially to the Leafs after you've owned the Leafs in the playoffs. I think that could definitely put him on the hot seat for sure. I don't think it would happen this year, but you know, like you said, lame duck city next year if that's the case, 100%.
Yeah, right. I just think that Monty is showing signs of.
Do you think he overcoaches Monty?
Yes,
I think so too. I think
at the end of the year when he didn't have to.
Yeah,
and I think he's doing it now because there's cracks in the foundation. Like they're showing signs of now, whether that's just like you said, let's turn it on and we're fine. Could be, I don't know, but there's some cracks in the foundation the last month or so where it looks like, oh boy, that didn't look great. Or that didn't look great. Or, you know, there's question marks now. And I feel like he's going to be too handsy and he's going to make some decisions and things. It's going to be a little bit too nervous coaching. And then it could be the detriment again. And if that happens 2 years in a row, That's not good.
No, I think he's a little too, like, knee-jerky.
Yes.
You know, like, if something's not working, you know, if he tries a new line combination that looked good in practice, say, and then they go into a game and they have, like, a rough three or four shifts, like, all of a sudden he's done with it. Like, that's it. That sucked. Didn't work. And then he doesn't seem to stick with things or stick with guys, especially younger guys. Bouncing guys in and out of the lineup. Like, can you settle on a lineup and stop with the, I mean, maybe it's like, oh, I'm trying to keep guys fresh thing. But to me, and this goes back to the whole load management thing, like if you're trying to keep guys fresh, it should be your top guys. It's not your bottom six guys that play 8 minutes a night. So I feel like it's a little too, you know, knee jerk and, you know, trying to find a spark or something like that. Like you don't have to do that every game, every shift, every period.
Your team's not going to be on fire all the time.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to grind through it.
Right. And he doesn't let him grind through it. And that's something Julian did well in that year is that he kind of let it, because there were times when they were floundering some, but they stayed with the four rolling lines. Like, he stayed with it and it worked. Like, it now doesn't work all the time, but it worked in that case. Like, you have to have a feel for your team too. But the thing I can't understand is Cassidy got scrutinized for not, you know, sticking with the young guys, not giving them a chance and all this other stuff. And Montgomery's done the same fucking thing this season. Merkulov comes in, plays 6 minutes. He's gone. Like, Beecher gets sent down time after time. Like, when he has three great games, but then has one bad one. Whoop. See you later. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, so he does that just like Cassidy did. So what I don't understand is, why'd you let Cassidy go when now Montgomery's calling him out in the media, which Cassidy did. And now he's, you know, sending young players in and out of the lineup. Like Cassidy did. Like, so I don't understand the couple of reasons that you fired Cassidy.
Right.
Because Montgomery's doing the same thing. You know, yeah. So maybe it's a team thing. Like, is it a team thing? Like, this team is just who they are, and this, they're going to play the way they want to play, and that's it. Like, you can't reinvent the wheel with them. Like, this is who they are.
So, yeah. I mean, it could be, I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, there's been, you know, a decent amount of those guys have been there for quite a while, you know? Yeah. So yeah. Maybe that is the case. Maybe it's like, you know, we're going to play how we play and, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out because this is kind of what we do. But, you know, geez, like, I don't know. Montgomery is definitely a little antsy. Like, he's different than he was. And
well, he is.
I've always said this about the being hard on the team. Like, if you aren't that guy and you haven't been that guy, and all of a sudden you're barking at McAvoy on the bench, sometimes it doesn't work, dude.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, sometimes it's like, this is phony baloney. Who the fuck are you? Like, you haven't done this all year long, and now you're bitching at me on the bench.
Yeah.
Like,
I wonder if, you know, cause he has gotten on them in practice a little bit. Maybe he's just concerned about their level of play at this point in the year. Like, McAvoy sure has been down. Like, you know, he needs to be better. Like, Marchand has been down. Like, the team as a whole was down for a bit, and he yelled at them in practice and had them skating gassers and all this stuff. Like, maybe he's just concerned, and he's like, these guys' heads aren't in it right now. I need to do something to get somebody's attention and be like, hey, wake up. You know, playoffs start on fucking Saturday. Let's get ready to go here, boys, or it's going to be another early exit. Like, I think he might be nervous of that, you know, like the team's not ready. Like, he's saying the right things. Like, I like where our game is trending. We played well against the playoff teams coming down the stretch, all that stuff. But in his heart of hearts, does he really think they're ready after seeing some games like Washington and stuff like that, where, you know, you play a physical team or a team that's desperate to win and you don't match their intensity? Like, I get it. You already clinched, so, you know, your foot's not on the gas, but you're going to all of a sudden have to go from 0 to 60. And are they prepared for that? We'll see.
I think you're seeing some holes in there. He sees holes in the team and he's trying to patch it up, and we'll see what happens. But this series scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, me too.
And it doesn't seem to scare the crap out of anybody else.
No, like, I don't know why.
It's a foregone conclusion they're going to beat Toronto. I'm seeing polls where it says who's going to win, Leafs or Bruins, and it's 85-15. Like, it's off the charts, Bruins. And I'm just like, I don't think so. Like, this could be the one year where Toronto is really blatantly better on paper than the Bruins. Like, blatantly better, especially the top six and the, you know, just throughout the line, the forward group. But the defensive group is Bruins. Goaltending's Bruins. But that forward group is, they can just outscore you. And this Bruins team has not been playing great offensively at all.
Yeah, so the Leafs have probably four game breakers on offense. If you say Matthews, Marner, Nylander, and Tavares. Yeah. And Tavares is, you know, what he is, but he still can shoot the puck. So
you count
those four, and the Bruins have one. They have Pasternak. Marchand hasn't played up to that level in a long time this year. So the one mistake to one of those guys could be a goal. So. Sure. I am really worried about this series. I agree with you. I think the edge in defense is the Bruins. I think the edge in goaltending is the Bruins. But here's and the forward edge goes to the Leafs. Where's the coaching edge? What do you think? Is it Montgomery or is it a push?
I think it's a push. Like I wouldn't consider Montgomery. If you look at all the playoff teams in there right now, Montgomery being the bottom half, like what would tell you that Montgomery has any advantage over anybody?
Yeah. Wise? I mean, I would agree with you. I think it's a push.
They lost.
I think it's a push. I don't know if he's made, especially in the playoffs, I don't know if he's made the decisions to help the team win. Right. In fact, last year you could say he made decisions that helped the team lose. Right. So that's, and then specialty teams, you know, power play is Toronto. Boston's power play has been dreadful down the stretch. And the statistics prove that out in the regular season. I think the Leafs are 6th or 7th in power play. Bruins are 13th. Penalty killing is Bruins over the Leafs. And then in the amount of penalties taking, the Leafs actually take a little bit more penalties than the Bruins do. So hopefully that helps the Bruins in the long run. I feel like the Bruins will win the series because of goaltending. But I think it's going to go 6-7.
Yeah, definitely going at least 6.
And
definitely.
The Bruins have home ice. The Bruins historically, other than a couple of long runs, have not been good. This core group has been terrible in game 7s.
Yeah.
So
they it's nut cutting time.
It does not bode well for them if it gets to a 7th game because they seem to tense up and tighten up and struggle. So I'm going to say Bruins in 6 because if it gets to 7, I would pick the Leafs, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
That's how I feel.
Fitting end.
I think the Bruins. I think the Bruins win in 6, but I think it could be Leafs in 7. If it gets to 7 games, it's going to be the Leafs in 7.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. Chirp 7. Derek Forward has been loaned to Providence for conditioning stint. Team announced a few weeks ago that he was done. May he be available, and does that scare the shit out of you?
What the hell is going on?
I have no idea what's going on. They said he was done.
Yeah, they said he was done, and now all of a sudden we're gonna play him. Why are we gonna play him?
Well, here's my question: do you want him anywhere near the ice unless two guys get hurt?
No. All right. Who is your defensive core going into the playoffs?
My defensive core is honestly, if I was the coach,
yes,
I would have Lindholm, McAvoy, Lowry, Carlo, Peak Wotherspoon. That's what I would go with if it was me.
No Shattenkirk?
Oh, Shattenkirk. You know what? I'd probably go with Shattenkirk over Wotherspoon just for the power play thing. Yeah. But I would play Lowry.
I would consider it.
His pants, then you put Grizzlick in or whatever. But I would go with the guy who can. To me, Lowry is a better version of Grizzlick. Like he's a bigger, younger, more offensively gifted player than Grizzlick. Like I don't think Grizzlick is good enough at this stage in his career to take minutes away from. Especially with his history in the postseason, to take minutes away from Lowry. I think you start with Lowry and see what you have. If he sucks, then put Grizzlick in. Fine. But if he plays well, then you keep riding him until he doesn't play well.
Yeah, I think of the guys that are on this team right now, I think I would probably go Lindholm, McAvoy, Shattenkirk, Carlo, Wotherspoon, Peak.
Okay, so you put Shattenkirk as second pair?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
The first pair is going to play 27, 28 minutes.
Right.
Other guys aren't going to, if you want to flip Wotherspoon and Shattenkirk, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, not with that.
I think I go with those guys. And then if somebody gets hurt.
The point is, I don't want Grizzlick or Forbort anywhere near the ice.
No, I don't. Well, those guys get hurt. I mean, yeah, I think Grizzlick is fine against certain teams. But you're not going to play any of those.
Fine against the Maple Leafs.
He'll be fine against the Leafs, I feel like. But Florida, nope. Washington, nope. Carolina, nope. So, I mean, we'll see. It'll be probably matchup based, but I feel like, and you probably do too, that Grizzlick's going to be in there to start the playoffs.
He's going to be, and it's going to, and I'm telling you, the first turnover he makes is going to be all over X. Like the tweets are going to be coming. Yeah.
Do you think who's sitting? Is it Wotherspoon? Is Shattenkirk in?
I would assume Wotherspoon hasn't been great at the end of the year.
He's been fine, but he hasn't been. No,
he hasn't been what he was. I'll say this though. And I was watching Behind the Bee, and they mic'd up Wotherspoon. I love the guy. Like, he's chirping guys left and right. He's embracing the nastiness and the physicality and stuff. And you need that in the playoffs.
Sure, you do.
About this, especially in the bottom pair, is what they've been missing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to decide: do you need the power? Do you need Shattenkirk on the power play? This is why they're getting screwed with McAvoy. It's because they need Shattenkirk's power play prowess or whatever, if he has any. And that takes away from what I think they really need across the board is the toughness on the bottom pair.
They do need the toughness on the bottom pair. And if they listen to you and Lowry was in playing second pair, he could be power play one and you wouldn't need Shattenkirk in the lineup.
I'm telling you, I mean, that would be a secret weapon on power play one. And
You
roll with it.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like the length that he gives you can shut down plays before they develop just because he
could give the Toronto Maple Leafs a problem because they were 19th in goals against. Like, they're not a great defensive team.
Yeah.
And he could really be a problem from a guy that they would really have a hard time with. But, of course, you always have that risk that he would shit himself or he wouldn't play well or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, in his own end, he's still not great. He isn't.
No, he's not. And against them, probably scary.
Yeah.
No doubt. All right, who the fuck is this guy? Sam Colangelo. Legendary Samuel was out there with number 66. What are your thoughts on wearing kind of iconic, legendary numbers as a youngster?
All right, I don't have a problem with people wearing like 4 or 9,
right?
Because they're low numbers. Everybody wears those numbers. Those aren't iconic numbers, right. You know, around the league. You know, when you think of Boston, sure, Bobby Orr, 4. Yeah. You know, but you don't, or Detroit, 9, Gordie Howe. Yeah. Right. But, you know, you don't think of 9 and Nashville Predators and be like, oh, why is that guy wearing 9? What does he think? He's fucking Gordie Howe. Right. Like, no, you don't think that. But if anybody wears like 66, 99, you know, those numbers that are a little out of the ordinary, a little unusual.
Yeah.
Who the fuck is this guy? Is exactly what goes through your mind. And is he Mario Lemieux? Nope. Then get that goddamn number off your back. Right. That's my thought on it. Yeah, I mean, you're asking to be compared to Mario Lemieux. And, right. And hey, newsflash, you're not going to measure up.
No.
Mario's going to be better than you every single time.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you this. No one should ever wear 99.
No.
I mean, no one should ever wear it. And 66 is like a close second to me. Like, Lemieux is just unbelievable. Like, that's second to me, too. I mean,
those are the two in hockey. Those are the two. Yeah. And maybe, I mean, 77, people don't really wear that. But, like, you know, Bork.
Right.
Coffee. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's some legendary guys, defensemen who were born 77. So I could see, you know, people staying away from that too, to a certain degree. But 66 and 99 are in a league of their own, and
those
shouldn't be worn by anybody.
Yeah. Well, you know, congrats to Sam who scored his first NHL goal. So that's that was good. I'll tell you what, that he's a duck, right? And I'm ducks.
Yeah.
Angelo.
Yeah.
That team is young and with
Carter Gauthier.
Yes, with Gauthier and with Zegras and with Colangelo and with Carlson.
Yeah.
Like
Leo Carlson, Troy Terry. They have some
underrated player.
Yeah. Who's the defenseman too? Minchikov?
Oh yeah.
Minchikov, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Russian or Ukrainian guy.
Yeah. Russian guy. Minchikov.
Mintikov.
Yeah. They have some really good young talent there. That's going to be a fun team to watch. You know, go to Utah and play. Sure.
DraftKings Sportsbook is Boston's hometown sportsbook. It's live right here in Massachusetts. Bet local on all of your favorite sports from the comfort of your own home with DraftKings. To celebrate, all new customers receive up to $200 in bonus bets when you sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook using code ITR. You can now bet local on money lines, spreads, props, and more with one of America's top-rated sportsbooks. That's DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and sign up with the code ITR to get up to $200 in bonus bets to use. Now that mobile sports betting is live in Massachusetts, that's code ITR only, DraftKings Sportsbook.
If you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, call 800-327-5050 or visit helplinema.org to speak with a trained specialist free and confidentially 24/7. Must be 21 plus, physically present Mass, eligibility restrictions apply, subject to regulatory licensing requirements. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. Opt-in required. Bonus issued as free bets. Terms at DraftKings.com/MA.
Without a doubt. Okay. Beauty for this week. I'll tell you what. It can't be anyone other than the legendary Jack Edwards.
Gonna love you, eh? They're gonna be loving you from dawn until dusk.
Welcome to another world tour of the Who Has More Fun Than Us crew. Pretty special experience to come back there.
Jay, how you doing, bud?
Chris Chelios. You know, you're in the Hall of Fame. You can get on it.
That's the only time you ever get married, people.
When you came to Boston, you said, I want to bring a Stanley Cup to this town. And a lot of people said, yeah, yeah, yeah. How did you bring it here? 3-on-2 here, Bergeron in front. Project's place. Top of the circle. Try score.
I'll tell you what. Some of those calls, though, I'll give this to Jack. He had a really good, like, excitable call. Like one of the real good ones, like when people score, like Nathan Horton scored that goal or Miro the Hero. Like he had some really great calls on like really great goals, big time goals. And so that's something I'll miss about him is that he was really good at that thing. Like he was really good at that.
He was, you know, we've said it before, a really passionate Bruins fan. And and you could tell when the Bruins scored and in big moments that he was just as happy as all the fans were. And that was one of the things that was great about him and was really a fun part about him, you know, calling games for the Bruins.
Yeah, no question. And of course he'll be missed and be interesting to see who is the next play-by-play guy.
Yeah, it will be. And fingers crossed that it's John Forslund. As the rumors go. So we have a bender today, and we mentioned it a little bit earlier in the broadcast, but our bender is Sidney Crosby.
Get off the ice.
Oh, that's not nice to say about Sidney Crosby.
The guy just whines and bitches and moans. And when Pastrnak took that slap shot with 0 seconds left in the closing seconds of the game on the breakaway, first of all, he didn't take a full slap shot. Like he did let up some, and I don't know. I mean, you could say like, why is he doing it? Just flipping in the corner or whatever, or just skate it out. Okay, fine, whatever. But I didn't think it was anything. You know,
he had a partial breakaway with 3 seconds left and he was trying to score before the clock ended.
Right.
Like, don't tell me that. Yeah. Don't tell me that Sidney Crosby wouldn't have tried to score a goal there because of course he would have. So 100%. The fact that he's yelling at Pastrnak at the end of the game, I think it's just sour grapes. They were losing. It was a big game that they lost and he was just pissed off and he took it out on Pastrnak. So, so Sidney Crosby is the bender this week and it's well-deserved. Because he should 100%. Not have been, you know, little whiny bitch in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, Sid's great. And, of course, we'd love to have him on the Bruins
Yeah. You know. I take all that back, Sid, if you come to the Bruins next year.
Come on along.
Yeah, I want you to bitch at all the other guys on all the other teams, you know. So,
All right, let's take an update on our season predictions at the beginning of the year. How about this?
Okay.
I had Austin Matthews scoring at least 60 goals. He's approaching 70.
Check.
Trying for it tonight.
Yeah.
Check. And then the Bruins, my Bruins prediction, Jake DeBrusk getting under 20 goals. He had 19. Check.
That, yeah, check. So, but we're not happy about that. I think you jinxed Jake. You tried to get rid of the jinx partway through the season. It seemed to work for a hot second there where he got hot. But your overall kibosh on Jake hurt the team, and I'm mad at you for it, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
My league-wide prediction was Nathan MacKinnon scores 50 and wins the Hart. So he's got the 50. The Hart's going to be tough because Kucherov's having, you know, an outstanding year. But he'll be right in the mix. He'll be, you know, top three. He'll be in there.
Yeah, he'll be in there.
And then my Bruins prediction was Matty Patra sticks with the Bees all year and is top three for the Calder. That did not work out for me, Matt Patras, or the Bruins. No, but I would like to see him next year stick with the Bruins all year and have a very good season.
I think what's going to happen is he's going to start in the AHL. I really do.
You think?
I think so, and I think Markulov and Lysell have a better chance. I think Markulov's going to start with a big club. Lysell is kind of 50-50, I think, and I think Patra does get some time in the AHL. I keep forgetting about Patra now. I'm thinking about the situation next year with the salary cap,
right,
who to fill holes with and who they're losing and everything. I think you can really let DeBrusk walk because you can put in one of these three kids in there to start and then figure it out and keep that money and maybe get a guy at the trade deadline or what have you. But they have three offensive players there in Markulov, Lysell, and Patra that could all be on the team at one point or another next year, making short money. It could be better than some of the other options that they might have.
Yeah. Here's a thing, you know, both of those guys, Lysell and Markulov, if they start with the big club and Patra does start in the AHL. And I agree. I think he could use some seasoning. It seems like most of the guys that have come through here have gotten at least a taste in the AHL before they've come up and had success, you know, whether it's DeBrusk or Marchand or Bergeron, Krejci, all down the list. So I feel like that could definitely happen. But if you looked at the lines right now, you know, if you had Coyle, Marchand, and Lysell, or Merkulov, you know, that's pretty good. You're playing with good players. Or your Pasternak, Zaka, Merkulov, Lysell. Either one of those guys plays with good players. And then if you do re-sign Danton Heinen, he moves down with Frederick and Geeky, and all of a sudden that line's a little bit better.
Right.
And
you still have Patra potentially if he came.
You still have Patra potentially that could come in, and you know you could move Danton Heinen down to the fourth line if Patra has a really good start to the season or wins it out of camp, whatever the case may be. I think he does need the seasoning, so he should start in Providence.
But you could have Heinen and Beecher and Brazo or something in the fourth line,
sure.
Yeah.
Or Boquist, whatever. But those guys do give you some options, and that's not even saying that you go out and make, you know, some kind of a move for a proven goal scorer or, you know, whatever the case you need, trade a goalie and bring in someone else. Or like you said, maybe you go with that group and you make a move at the deadline for whatever you need if there's an injury or, you know, whatever the case may be. So it could give you some important flexibility cap wise and also with the roster if, you know, if injuries
are. Defense is pretty set. I mean, if Lowry steps in and you've got Wotherspoon and Peak at decent money, like your top six is like all set.
Yeah, you're good. Unless you're looking to, you know, make a splash and really make an upgrade and, you know, looking to move on from Lindholm or or something like that. But
yeah, if you're six defensemen, or and then you have, you know, I don't know, whoever and the you know, Michael Callahan's or whatever that can fit.
Yeah, I mean somewhere. they'll go out and get a depth guy or two, I'm sure.
Yeah, get a guy.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean they could, you know, if those guys pan out and they need them to, you know, they
have some real flexibility.
Yeah, they could really have some flexibility moving forward to make some big additions if they so choose.
The Bruins affiliates have made the playoffs. How's that? AHL, Providence Bruins, second place in the Atlantic. They will play in the second round. They have a bye in the first round. The Boston Bruins were one of seven organizations, three of them in the Eastern Conference, that had all NHL, AHL, and ECHL levels make the playoffs. Boston, Florida, and Tampa Bay, all their affiliates made the playoffs. Dallas, LA, Vancouver, and Winnipeg, all their affiliates made, so seven overall, and Boston was one of them.
How about that?
Yeah.
What do you think the reason is?
I think that the Bruins have a pretty good, you know, the drafting they've done recently, they've done a pretty good job with it. You know, they had Lowe Ryan, Lysel, and Merkulov down there for time. Plus, they also made some really good moves by getting guys like Megna and Patrick Brown. It's been good for them down there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have veteran, you know, 4HLers, 4H guys.
Yeah.
Like, that are doing pretty well for them.
Yep.
And they do a pretty good job of identifying guys that can add good veteran depth at the AHL level. They've done that for a while.
Yeah. I think the top three reasons, goaltending, mm-hmm.
okay,
throughout right. the organization right. is the number one reason. They develop goalies. They have good goalies all through the organization from right. Bruins on down. Number two, I think, is their system. I think the way they play defensively lends itself to winning games. And if you buy in, you know, you help the goalies, and I think you can win games, whether it's 2-1 or, you know, 4-3, whatever. And then coaching. I think they have really good coaches.
Yes.
Throughout their whole organization. I think Ryan Mugenel will be an NHL coach at some point. Right. And I think Trevor Wallen will get a chance at the AHL.
Yeah,
Terrence Wallen will get a chance at the AHL level. At some point, because he's done really well with Maine. So I think those are the reasons, in my opinion, why the organization has done so well, you know, top to bottom.
I think those are great points. I think you're right about the goaltending, and you are right about the coaching and the sort of the player development. I mean, their player development has gotten much better than it was in the past.
Yeah.
Much better. They've identified guys who can scout and who can coach it and who stick to the system. And I think they've done a really good job throughout the organization. Maine, they squeaked into the ECHL playoffs, and they will play at Adirondack in game one this weekend. So Maine, out of the ECHL, and Maine Mariners, Coach Wallen, they make the playoffs, and the Providence Bruins will be in the playoffs as well. So good for them. Good for those teams, good for those areas, Providence and Portland, sure. Maine, getting some good hockey, good playoff hockey. Week ahead, the Bruins will play on Saturday in game one against the Toronto Maple Leafs at TD Garden at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Should be a doozy. Monty has said that he could even wait until Saturday morning to announce the goaltender for that one.
So of course he will.
We'll
see. It's because he's
that works.
No, I mean,
like waiting.
Both. I mean, the teams have played each other so much.
Right.
They're division rivals. It's not like it's a team that hasn't, you know, maybe hasn't seen one of the goalies. Like, Toronto's seen both of these guys, so it's no, you know, it's not like any kind of huge mystery. You know, they know the scouting report on both guys. So it's not like, you know, if you pull, you know, oh, it's Allmark, and then all of a sudden, you know, you switch, you know, half an hour before the game, it's Swayman. Like, that's not going to affect anyone from Toronto. They don't care.
No, they don't care.
Because they've had the scout already. They know both guys. They know strengths and weaknesses of both guys. So I really don't think it matters at all. They could announce it now. They could announce it 2 days from now. They could announce it, you know, not until game time. I don't think it's going to affect Toronto at all. It's who executes the best and makes the least amount of mistakes and is gets the goaltending. I think that's what's going to decide the series. Can the Bruins get the puck out of their own zone consistently without turning it over and getting hemmed in for long stretches? If they can do that, they'll win the series. If they get stuck in their own zone and then they take penalties, or if they're stuck in their own zone and turn it over and give up speed through neutral ice and give up on random rushes, they'll lose the series. They will, because Toronto's too skilled up front to give up, you know, those kind of chances. So it comes down to how the Bruins can move the puck out of their own zone and transition. And then I think, you know, the Bruins have enough players, offensive players, to be able to score enough to win.
I think that one little sneaky psychological aspect is Toronto won a first round series last year.
That's true.
So you don't have that thing against them anymore. So they have won that. So I think Toronto's going to come in here much more confident than you think.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, they win game one. Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, as Ty Anderson pointed out too, Toronto is a much better 5-on-5 team this year than they have been in the past. So,
and much better 5-on-5 team than Tampa Bay, which is one of the worst ones.
Right. So everybody was talking about, oh, we don't want Tampa. We want Toronto. Well, penalties usually go down in the playoffs. The last couple of years, it hasn't seemed to have been the case. They've seemed to call more penalties, but usually the referees kind of put their whistles away come playoff time. And if that's the case and you're playing more 5-on-5 hockey, the matchup you probably should have wanted was Tampa Bay. But you have Toronto now, and you know, they're going to be a handful. They're going to be a handful.
Wanted Tampa Bay. I wanted them over. I thought both of us were tough, but if I had to pick, I wanted Tampa Bay over Toronto. I just think that they can beat Tampa Bay now at this point with Tampa Bay's aging sort of group. I know Kucherov's still really good and Stamkos had a really good year, but I think that the Bruins can beat them now. I'm not so sure about Toronto. Something just doesn't feel right. This thing coming in.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's the Bruins have had their number for so long that eventually that dam's going to break. And I feel like it could be this year.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm scared to death of it. That's kind of where I am. I mean, I'm hoping with all my heart and soul that the Bruins can somehow find a way to pull this out in six games. But like I said before, if it gets to seven games, I have a really, really, really bad feeling about how this is going to end. All
right, so what's your prediction?
B's and six.
Okay.
I got to stay positive. B's and six. B's
and six. Okay. All right, I'm going Toronto in seven.
No, don't do that. Don't fucking do that, Mr. Hitting all his predictions.
I hit them all.
Fucking take that back right now. Take it back. Take it back.
All right, I'll take it back.
It's too late.
It's too late. You fucked it up.
You've already fucked it up. God damn it.
Six. Yeah. I'm with you. I think the Bruins will win as long as they don't just
shit all over themselves.
Play outside of what they need to do.
Like, yeah.
Own who you are, play that way, and you'll be okay. Like, if you try to be something else or making plays inside the blue line and turning the thing over and being stupid, then you're going to lose.
Yeah. People always say the first round is always the toughest round to win, too.
It's been a bitch for years.
Mm-hmm.
Even against Toronto.
Yeah. Sure.
They should have lost to Toronto a couple times.
Yeah.
Already.
They should have.
All right. Go to InsideTheRings.com for Bruins Benders merchandise. Follow the Bruins Benders podcast on X at Bruins Benders on social media. Live post-game shows. And on Saturday night, right after game one, we'll be live on YouTube. So go ahead and subscribe to the Inside the Rink YouTube page and catch us Saturday night after game one. Hey, go Bruins.
Here we go, Bruins. Here we go.
Yeah.